Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell, ESPN. We are here on Monday. It's October 28th, 2019. And today, strangely, seems to be Patriots Defense Day for me here on the various ESPN entities. I wrote about the Patriots defense for ESPN.com. If you have not listened to today's episode of ESPN Daily, I am on that with Mina Kimes talking about the Patriots defense. And I'm going to take a deeper look today on the podcast by talking to two experts in the field who cover the team a little differently. We're going to talk a little bit later to Dominique Foxworth about the X's and O's and sort of the schemes and what the Patriots are doing to get off to this incredible start. But first, I want to start with the foremost source, I think I would say, on the Patriots, who covers them, of course, for us at ESPN. It is longtime beat reporter Mike Rees. Mike, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. I love talking to BBs, right? Bill Belichick, Bill Barnwell, let's go.
I would hope, Mike, that I am slightly more forthcoming than Bill Belichick when it comes to perhaps the discussions we have. But yeah, I mean, this is to me at least, I want to know what you think as well. I'm shocked. I'm absolutely shocked, even given that it's been an easy schedule, even given those sort of caveats. There's never been a defense by the numbers in the history of modern football that has played this well. And to me, I think it was one thing with the 2007 offense because they at least added weapons for Tom Brady. You could sort of see, okay, if all these players work out the way the Patriots are expecting, you know, this could drastically change their effectiveness on offense after what had been a difficult year for them in 2006. I did not see anything close to this coming from the Patriots defense. So how surprised are you at how well they're playing so far this year?
Well, I'm with you, Bill, and I don't know how anyone could have said at the start of the season that they would have seen this coming. I mean, if we go back and revisit the storylines in the off season, it was all about, oh, you know, who's going to call the defense and the coaching staff, and, you know, Brian Flores leaving to become Dolphins head coach. Greg Schiano would be, you know, the play caller, but he's, you know, quickly resigns after that. I mean, no one was talking about, yeah, they'll be just fine. In fact, they'll be the most dominant defense in the NFL. Like, literally, find me the person who said that. There was no one, right?
Yeah.
So I'm with you. Very surprised.
Yeah, I mean, it would be one thing if this team had added a ton of talent, but the biggest addition they made this offseason was Michael Bennett, who is no longer on the roster. He wasn't even starting Patriots along the defensive line. Instead, it's been guys like Jamie Collins stepping up. It's been the players who were here staying healthy. In terms of your expectations on an individual level heading into this season, who's really grossly outplayed, whether what you were thinking they were going to do or what the Patriots thought they were going to do heading into 2019?
Well, let's start with Jamie Collins.
Yeah.
Right? So they trade him in 2016, and they had to fight, scrap, and claw just to get a third-round pick, you know, from the Cleveland Browns from him. So, and basically, you know, it was almost like that move, Bill, at the time, had all the feeling of them thinking it was addition by subtraction.
Oh, for sure.
Right? So they re-sign him this year to a one-year deal, you know, really modest, and that was on May 16th. So, like, we're talking, like, you know, not at the start of free agent, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, May 16th, you're already sort of in your off-season program here, right? So to me, when they re-sign him, I remember tweeting this, and I own it. I remember saying, like, he's going to have to, like, fight to earn a roster spot. I'm not saying he's going to not be on the roster and help him, but based on the history here, like, this is not a given that he will be on the team. And not only is he on the team and starting, he's arguably been their best defender.
Yeah. You know,
against the Browns, 65 snaps, 13 tackles, 1.5 sacks. Everywhere you look, number 58, he's all over the field. So I guess I'd start with him.
Yeah, I mean, it really is staggering because the reputation he had coming out of that trade was that, oh, we traded him in part because not only does he want a big contract, but he also freelances. He doesn't always doing what the Patriots want him to do. And if there's one thing we know the Patriots want you to do, it is the thing Bill Belichick is asking you to do on a given stuff. He doesn't want you to freelance, doesn't want you to, you know, want you to trust your instincts, but doesn't necessarily want you to, you know, go out on a limb and go do something else totally different. And that hasn't been the case this year, and it really is, you know, sort of staggering to me. You look at the advanced metrics for Collins. He's been incredible. He's been great as a blitzer, great in coverage, great as a run defender. And, you know, for a guy whose base salary this year is $900,000, it's, you know, Patriots have done this before. They've signed guys for less than you would have expected and turned them into, great players. But like with Chris Long, for example, you know, they were signing a guy who wanted to be here because he figured this was my best chance of winning a Super Bowl. I can't speak to Collins' motivations, but, it wasn't like he had a ton of interest on the market. This is a guy who had been basically not benched, but who had been taken out of a three down role in Cleveland. And maybe he took less to come play for the Patriots, but the league didn't evaluate this guy as a superstar after a couple years in Cleveland. This is a, you know, this is an absolute, reclamation project and a wild success for the Patriots.
It is, Bill. And I always look at these things as like, okay, what can I learn from this situation as a reporter or as someone who loves football that I can apply to either another storyline or the future if something like this comes up again. And a couple things stand out to me. The first is, in a week where a lot of people are talking about Bill Belichick and 300 wins, becoming only the third head coach to total 300 wins between the regular season and postseason, part of his greatness is he literally goes with the clean slate theory every year. Like, I don't care what you did in 2018 or 2017 or 2016. You're coming in at the start of 2019, and you're getting a blank slate. And that's Tom Brady, too, right? And it's like you have to prove it and reestablish your level of performance. And so you take that from Belichick and then apply it to Jamie Collins, who had gotten paid in Cleveland, so he probably felt like a little more secure because he had that big contract when he went to Cleveland. And then he comes back and has Gerard Mayo, his former teammate in New England, now as his position coach, and, you know, is playing for more than himself. He had cited his family and how it's more than just him, which he learned in a lot of ways from Christian Kirksey out in Cleveland, who, if you remember Bill on Hard Knocks, he had this saying like, you gotta know your why or something like that. What's your why? Yep. And Jamie Collins found his why. And so it's just the whole thing. It's like a different person. I just find that whole thing fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a fundamentally different player from the guy he even had been in New England, let alone the player he was in Cleveland. And you brought up Gerard Mayo. And I think this is a really interesting thing and something that only really happens in New England. Maybe one or two other places that are Patriots influenced around the NFL, but the Patriots, like you mentioned, were undergoing some level of uncertainty when it came to their coordinator or defensive play caller. It was Matt Patricia for a few years, then Patricia left, Brian Flores got the job as play caller, Brian Flores left, of course, for the Dolphins. And the Patriots were going to hire Greg Schiano. Greg Schiano resigned from the team in March, and then they didn't really name a replacement. It seems to have been, you know, sort of drilled down to one of three candidates, one of which is Steve Belichick, the Patriots safeties coach, who has a play sheet on Sundays. Gerard Mayo, who it seems like was calling plays at least part of the time during the preseason, who also has a play sheet on some Sundays, and then the third option is maybe the greatest defensive mind in the history of the National Football League in Bill Belichick. So, Mike, to your knowledge and to your estimation, who's actually making the play-by-play decisions for the Patriots on Sundays these days?
Okay, so here's what I would say. It's different. For start with, like, the whole idea of, like, it's different on defense than it is on offense, where, like, you're calling in a specific play on offense every time. Like, you have a certain amount of defensive calls that you're going to go into a game with. So it's a different sort of procedure, if you will, or concept that when you're on the defensive side of the ball. But make no mistake, Bill, like Bill Belichick is leading the defense, and the players have said as much. I thought Dante Hightower, you know, their captain at the line, you know, linebacker, after the Monday night game against the Jets last week, he's on the air with our Susie Colbert, and he's talking about Belichick, and he's saying, look, he's always been a big part of those meetings, but now, like, he's up there, and it's clear cut, was basically what he was saying. And it's like, you don't have to go through, like, two or three coaches. Like, Bill's running the meeting, and this is what I want. This is how we're going to do it. And I think players have responded to that, you know, not that they didn't respond before to Brian Flores and Matt Patricia, but it's just become even more streamlined. So that's during the week, Bill, like Belichick leading the way. And then on game day, you have Steve Belichick. Is the biggest thing that they need to do is, okay, let's, we got to get the right personnel on the field. So Steve Belichick is going to, as in my view, is most likely looks like he's in charge of the personnel. Okay, we want, you know, we want nickel here, you know, which is really what they're doing mostly. They're playing mostly nickel defense, but we want this specific nickel package. Or, okay, they've come in with bigger personnel on offense. We got to go to our base. So he's going to be in charge of the personnel. And then you have Jerod Mayo, the inside linebackers coach, who's going to be the communicator with the player with the green dot on his helmet, who's leading the huddle, and that's Dante Hightower.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. This is a Patriots team where one of the things they do to an extreme extent is they sub players in and out. I think put it in my column today, over 20 players have played at least 100 snaps for the Patriots on defense this season. That's pretty high. Belichick talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if it's a record on the where it stands within the NFL, but it's certainly not common to see that many players playing a significant portion of the snaps for the Patriots, especially given that they've been healthy and haven't had many players miss time on the defensive side of the ball. In terms of Belichick, how much of this do you think is just that they lost out on Schiano and then didn't have the right timeline to hire a replacement, and so he's just sort of absorbing this role, as opposed to sort of the confidence and comfort he has with the other elements of this organization, given that Josh McDaniels, who has been here, you know, for several years now since returning from various coaching duties elsewhere, and then Nick Caserio has stayed in the front office as the personnel executive, sort of running that side of things behind Belichick for several years now. I mean, do you think he feels more comfortable with the other elements of the organization that's allowed him to focus more time on the defense? Or is it strictly just, we don't have a sort of defensive leader and I'm going to have to fill that role?
I think it's both, Bill. Like, I you know, if they didn't have Josh McDaniels leading the offense, I think that would be a huge strain on Belichick, because they've really had to deal with a lot of personnel instability there through the first half of the season. So knowing that you can turn that over to Josh McDaniels and everything's fine. I mean, to me, the great visual is when Belichick's got the whole defense huddled around him in that Monday night game, you know, and Josh McDaniels is leading the offense. It's almost like, oh, if I'm Bill, you know, I know that's taken care of, and I can, you know, dig in on the defense. And a great point by you on, you know, Nick Caserio with the personnel, knowing, like, hey, we got a situation, let's say, you know, 3-4 weeks ago where your kicker's going on injured reserve. We got to get new group in here, and he knows that, you know, that's taken care of up there. So I do think, though, Bill, like, he would have done it anyway, even if those areas weren't sort of well taken care of in the sense of Josh McDaniels, Nick Caserio. But that gives him even that much more comfort to do what he's doing.
Yeah, absolutely. It does seem like it'd be logical that it's a bit of both. And I think that's, you know, the broader thing it comes to with the Patriots is I think there's always, you know, at least on a fan side, we're always looking for one simple explanation for why something is happening. And it's usually always a combination of things. And I think that's absolutely true with the Patriots here. Looking forward for New England, now, obviously, I think the easy criticism is that they've played a weak schedule of quarterbacks, and that's certainly true. They have. I think that argument is a little nonsensical, given that they've now allowed 4 touchdowns to opposing offenses in 8 games. That's, by any standard, if they were playing a college team, that would be pretty good. But we're going to see this team tested in the weeks to come at quarterback. They play Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens next week. After the bye, it's Carson Wentz and the Eagles, Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, Deshaun Watson and the Houston Texans, and then Patrick Mahomes, presumably, and the Kansas City Chiefs. That is a very difficult slate of promising young quarterbacks. So, Mike, if this team wants to stay in the running for that discussion of being one of the best defenses of all time, and certainly one of the best Belichick-led defenses of all time, how well do they have to perform over the next week to sort of stay in that discussion?
Well, I'm a focus on one area of the game, Bill, that I think has maybe shown up a little bit the last couple weeks, where some teams have hurt them, and it's the run defense. Yeah. And yesterday against the Browns, so the Browns finished with 159 rushing yards on 22 carries, 7.2 average. Like, we're also going to factor in that it was raining,
right,
footing on the field, it was slippery, and when you got a good big back like Nick Chubb, those guys are hard to bring down.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me a little bit of LeGarrette Blount when he was with the Patriots, and, you know, on a rainy day, it was almost like, oh, this is LeGarrette Blount weather.
Mm-hmm.
But all that being said, like, the tackling in yesterday's game, I agree with everything we've talked about. This defense has done great. They deserve all the praise coming their way, but it's not like they've got it all figured out. In fact,
right,
you know, if we drill down a little bit, we could say, like, you know, there've been a little bit of vulnerabilities the last couple weeks with the run defense. So that would be the area, Bill, like, that I would focus on to say, if they want to keep this thing going, tighten it up there. And to simplify it, like, I look at it and say their base defense is basically what I call a 2-4 nickel. It's two big defensive tackles and then four versatile linebackers that can play on the edge, can play off the line, and then five defensive backs. And to me, if I'm an opposing offensive coordinator, like, I'm going to try to run on that.
Yeah.
And they had been doing a good job, the Patriots, initially sort of bottling that up. And, you know, this last game I thought was the first time where I looked at it and said, the other team is actually dictating a little bit in that area of the game. Let's keep an eye on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned this on SportsCenter heading into the game because they asked me to come up with maybe what's a weakness for the Patriots defense. And I thought, oh, great. This is going to be a pain to find. And I spent a little while looking for it. And I kind of figured, okay, well, you know, maybe if you come out in a 3 or 4 wide receiver set, you come out with, you know, smaller personnel, you ask the Patriots to match with 5 or 6 defensive backs. They're so deep in the secondary and have so much faith in their players in the secondary that you figure, okay, this is going to be a opportunity for them to match up. And then you run the football. That can be a way where maybe you're hoping you're going to take advantage of. And that's something the Patriots do on the other side of the ball as well. And yesterday, I had the numbers here and I lost them. I apologize, but the Browns had a lot of success doing exactly that with Nick Chubb, over 100 yards rushing, I think. Yeah, 17 for 125 with 3 or more wideouts on the field running the football. So teams are going to copy that strategy. They might not be able to do it quite as effectively. But, you know, there's very few weaknesses with this team, and there has to be some way for opposing teams to try and take advantage of them. In terms of – I have two more questions for you, Mike. One big question, I think, in terms of the broader – understanding of this team that I think you have unique insight to, having covered them for really the entirety of this Belichick era. This is a team that has a very viable chance of going 16-0. I think it's about 9.5% per ESPN's football power index. And I know that if you go and ask Bill Belichick about going 16-0, you know the exact answer you're going to get, which is we're going to take it one game at a time. You're going to get a scowl and then you're going to be moved on. Just from your sense of covering this team for so long, do you think the idea of going 16-0 and sort of having a chance to, you know, replace that sort of, not failure from 2007, but the biggest disappointment perhaps of the Brady Belichick era in losing that perfect season to the Giants, do you think that's important to them, or is it just we want to win a championship and whether it's 16-0 or 14-2, we don't care?
This might be the most naive answer, and you might be like, wow, I can't believe he actually buys this. But, Bill, I really think, like, if we're talking 19-0, like, yeah, I think that matters to them because of what it represents.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I truly believe it is all about the ring. And another 16-0 that doesn't result in a ring would it'd rather be 15-1 with the ring, 14-2 with the ring. Like, do you know what I mean? And last year, like we talked earlier here about like taking things that have happened and applying it, you know, going forward, learning from it. Like, I learned a lot from their season last year because, you know, Tom Brady always said, like, oh, the season starts after Thanksgiving, and we've sort of gone along with that, right? Like, but their season actually really didn't start till, like, mid to late December last year. Like, they had those back-to-back losses, you know, in Miami and Pittsburgh, and everyone's saying, oh, it doesn't look like the same old Patriots, yet they kept grinding away at it. Yeah, they had some good fortune with some things around them, with other teams, you know, falling in their favor, but they sort of reinvented themselves in mid-December, mid to late December. And so I bring that up, Bill, because I think this, like, the whole idea of going undefeated is so secondary to, like, we got to make sure that we're building towards something that when we get to the critical point, like for them, it was mid-December last year, we're playing our best football and we give ourselves the best chance to win a ring.
Right.
And all the players, I truly believe, buy into that. And we lived it last year because that was not a team I would have said was going to win a Super Bowl if you had asked me, you know, let's just say December 10th last year,
right?
And so that's sort of my, my thought on the undefeated, you know, how much it means to them sort of thought process.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I certainly think that if it were any other team, I wouldn't ask because obviously at the end of the day, no one's ever criticized for not going 16-0 and winning a Super Bowl. Like, as long as you win the Super Bowl, nobody cares. But the bar for this team is so high, perhaps unfairly, that, you know, it's not as if winning a Super Bowl, just winning a Super Bowl is a disappointment, but, you know, they have the ability to sort of hit this ceiling that's maybe higher than anybody else in the NFL, even the Niners, who, of course, are still undefeated. So last question for you, Mike, here, to talk about this defense. I know it's tough. This is going to be a difficult question because there are several candidates who might figure it, at least three people who come to mind for me, but if you had to pick an MVP from this defense, a possible defensive player of the year candidate. If you can only pick one guy, who are you picking?
Yep. I'll go with Stephon Gilmore. I like the shutdown corner, but I do want to tell you, like, and so that's my pick. I don't want to sit on the fence. I'm going to go with Gilmore.
Okay.
Been fun to watch, and Antonio Brown was here, and he tweets out, like, to him, Stephon Gilmore is the best corner. Or watching in the hallway at the stadium yesterday and hearing about Odell waiting for Stephon Gilmore outside the Browns locker room, and they're talking, like, the respect that Odell has for Gilmore. And so I'll go with him. And like you said, there's a lot of choices. I thought Jamie Collins could be in there. Dante Hightower could be in there. Kyle Van Noy could be in there. Danny Shelton could be in there. We haven't mentioned him. Like, he falls into the same category of the Jamie Collins thing that we talked about. He's playing at such a higher level than he did last year with the team. So, like, all those. Devin McCourty leads the NFL in interceptions. He could be in the discussion, but I'm not going to waver. I'm not going to sit on the fence, and I'll go with Stephon Gilmore. But isn't that remarkable, Bill, that you could literally probably make a case for seven guys?
It's incredible. I mean, it speaks to just how deep this defense is. But yeah, I do agree. I think that Stephon Gilmore makes this defense work in so many ways. And I think that, you know, the solution for a lot of teams would be just, hey, if we're confused, let's just throw it up to our best receiver and hope that he's going to make a play. And so many times when teams have done that this year, Stephon Gilmore has been there to make a play on the football, either to pick it off or force an incompletion. And he's been one of the most targeted cornerbacks in all of football, but he's still playing at an incredibly high level. And I think a very valid defensive player of the year pick. But Mike, it is always a pleasure to have you here talking about the Patriots. Where can people check out more of the work you do?
So, well, we go right on our ESPN.com to the Patriots page. And, Bill, if they go there, they'll also see your column on the Patriots defense.
Because
it shows up right there. They have to read it. It's great stuff. And so, and then on Twitter, it's Mike Reese, R-E-I, S as in Sam, S as in Sam. And just try to stay on that Patriots, you know, I guess, train here and take people behind the scenes into the locker room on that Twitter account.
One of the hardest working men at ESPN, Mike Reese. Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks so much, Bill.
All right. We're going to come back with Dominique Foxworth making his return to the show, talking more about this Patriots defense in a moment on the Bill Barnwell Show. All right. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show. I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. I am joined now by my colleague, my friend, a star contributor to the show, a regularly requested guest, someone who ghosted my previous request to have him on the show and then accused me of ghosting him.
Oh, gosh.
My colleague, Dominique Foxworth, making his return to the show. Dominique, how are you, buddy?
I'm so happy to be back, and I would like to let the past be the past, and let's get into this analysis, that's all.
classic DB mentality. Just forget about the mistake you made in the last play. It's a new rep. It's a new rep here on the Bill Barnwell Show. And, Dominique, we talk with Mike Reese about the personnel for the Patriots on defense and what they've been able to do over the first half of the season. You know what I'm coming to you for. I am coming to you for a X's and O's, smart analysis. Let's start with this. Are the Patriots doing anything that is drastically different, at least to your eyes, from what you've seen so far this year, than anyone else in the NFL or anything that they've typically done in years past? Is this a brand new idea? Is there anything secret that they're doing, or is it more just that they're just doing things very well?
I mean, I think it's the latter. So nothing is outrageous. I think they do have a couple tweaks here and there that come from, at least in the secondary, come from the security they have and the comfort level they have within the scheme, mm-hmm. where you'll see on the backside of cover two, sometimes they'll play kind of man under. They'll do a couple little tweaks here and there that I think could throw off a team, but it's not, they aren't tweaks that I've never seen before. I think the thing that they do that from week to week that's impressive is something that the Patriots have been known to do, is that they are able to turn their scheme, completely change their scheme from week to week. So while you may be preparing for a normal defense, you're like, all right, they love cover two, or they really are heavy and two man, or they're a blitz happy team. Normally you kind of lean back on your bread and butter, and your tendencies would tell you what to expect on third and a certain down and distance. But it seems like they are so geared towards game planning week to week that it seems like if you took the helmets, the logos off the helmets from week to week, you might be surprised at the defense that you're seeing, because their style can vary so much.
Do you think that's something that you're surprised more teams can't do? I mean, how many teams do you think realistically have the ability to pull that off on the defensive side of the ball and really change what they're doing on defense as their sort of core tenets from week to week? Is it just the Patriots?
I mean, I guess it's hard to say. I tend to lean on the side of having more faith in the intelligence of players than less. And I think that coaches often want to dumb things down and keep it simple, which is fair, because when you have players overthinking, they normally play more slowly and then you get yourself in trouble. The best thing you can do in football is kind of play fast. And I think that's fair. But I think for the most part, if you practice it, what you can do is have slight tweaks that look complicated. So one thing that I've seen the Patriots do is they'll have the safety come down and be in the box, and that safety at the snap of the ball will end up buzzing to the cover two flat area, and the corner will take over the deep half responsibility. So that is a minor thing that's not that difficult, but it's incredibly challenging for a defense. If you don't do that often, you know how easily it is, or how comfortable quarterbacks are with like counting up who's in the box. One safety down, that means single high. We're going to see cover one. We're going to see cover three. We may see a blitz. But actually, to be able to run it too deep out of a single deep look, like, I think that becomes a heck of a problem. I actually saw the Steelers do something similar to that, where they had the safety and the nickel kind of change responsibilities against the Steelers. The Steelers did that against the Chargers a few weeks back. And it's such a simple thing, because you only have two people change the responsibility. But quarterbacks get so accustomed to seeing a certain person doing that job. I think that other teams can put in tweaks like that without missing a beat.
No, I saw the Giants try and do that, and it didn't go as well as when the Patriots do it. They're not quite as good at disguising their coverage and going to guess like a cover two invert as the Patriots are. It turns out they're better, which I couldn't have predicted heading into watching the tape, but I learned that lesson. The Patriots are better than the Giants on defense.
Yeah. One other thing about the Patriots is, and this is a mindset that, again, I'm drawing just from watching tape. I'm not in their meetings, but it feels like they are a proactive defense, whereas defenses across the league are very reactionary. And while I think that they do obviously game plan from week to week to take different things away, it also feels like they are intent on doing different things for the sake of making it difficult to prepare for them. So they're not necessarily play to play, because there are some plays or some defensive calls where I'm like, why would you do that in this situation? Like, there's no reason to necessarily do this other than to put it on film and to have people worrying about it. And so often you see even smart quarterbacks, or not even smart quarterbacks, particularly smart quarterbacks, you'll see them throw the ball away. Like, they'll burn a play because they got fooled or they saw a ghost. That was the biggest problem of Sam Darnold a few weeks ago, is not that he was seeing ghosts. I think many quarterbacks, that happens to great quarterbacks. The problem is that when you aren't sure what's happening, you try to make a play anyway. And so I think the Patriots, by throwing out stuff that's just like on a third and eight in the third quarter, they'll do something that they have never done at any other point. It doesn't even necessarily make a ton of sense right there, but what it does is it creates an illusion for the quarterback, a difficulty for the quarterback, and smart quarterbacks will be like, all right, you got me this time. We'll throw it away. We'll burn this play. We'll punt it, and we'll come back next down. And they've been fortunate enough to play against a lot of very, not very smart quarterbacks who will try to make the play anyway and create a turnover.
Yeah, I mean, you hear about this when you talk to analytics people as well with the Patriots, where they'll do stuff. And in part, I think it's because they're very smart. In part, it's because they're typically ahead by a lot of points, and they can sort of, you know, they can be more creative and sort of do more stuff to throw people off. But they'll do things just to mess with, you know, the stuff you're charting or mess with your analytics coverage, because when you're up 21 points in the fourth quarter, if you screw up and you give up a long touchdown, it's not the end of the world. You're still in pretty good shape. But
So should I be insulted or encouraged that you said when you talk to analytics people, you don't consider me an analytics person?
What are we doing here? You're an Ivy League graduate, so we don't need to play the I'm condescending to you as an analytics person here, because you're not only are you extremely well-versed in football, but you're also, I feel quite confident, better at math than I am. So I'm not an analytics person relative to you, Mr. Fox.
I don't know what took me so long to come back on this show. I'm sorry. It was very foolish of me. I'm happy to be back.
All right, we'll get back to Dominique in a second. But first, guys, hiring can be a slow process. And Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But as you might expect for such a specific job title, he was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter, because ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He also used ZipRecruiter's candidate rating feature to filter his applicants so he could focus on the most relevant options. That's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And I understand most places are probably not looking for a director of coffee, but if you can find a director of coffee, you can probably find someone for your job at ZipRecruiter as well. So you can see why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes by trying ZipRecruiter today for free at our exclusive web address, which is ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. That's my last name. ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell, BARNWELL, ZipRecruiter.com/Barnwell. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Now back to the show. I think there's a really fascinating sort of element with Belichick and with the that sort of ghost conversation that Sam Darnold has. I think, you know, after that quote came out, at least in the public, at least from Adam Gase's reaction, there was this sort of backlash of, oh no, Sam Darnold admitted he was seeing ghosts, he's doomed, this is awful. And at least when you talk to people around the league, of which you are one, I want to include you in every possible group at this point that you might possibly be included in. You know, that's not that uncommon. That's not really that insulting. Obviously, I think the Jets' game plan was a mess, and I think Darnold made mistakes, but I think that does happen more than people think, no?
No, I'm absolutely sure it happens. Whether quarterbacks use that verbiage of saying I'm seeing ghosts or saying something to the effect of they're playing with 13, it seems like they're playing with 13 out there, or they fooled me on that play. Like, I can dig up plays where I was on defenses that fooled Aaron Rodgers and created interceptions. They're the same thing to Peyton Manning, and those guys also see ghosts. I think it is tough because it's not something that we're used to seeing. It's normally something that the NFL Network or NFL Films wouldn't clear for us to see, is someone saying something like that. So it is a bad look for him, but it's not uncommon. You can watch a Patriots game and see Tom Brady at the snap of the ball, like almost immediately intentionally throw the ball at the feet of one of his receivers because he thought something was coming and something different came. Essentially, he saw some ghosts and he tried to get out of that play as quickly as possible.
Now, I mean, I watched the Monday Night Football game every week. I've heard the mic'd up segments. There have been times where they've gone through an entire 30-second segment and the person who's mic'd up has not said an actual English word. They've just been grunting or yelling. So, like, I was happy to see it. It felt like a actual bit of honesty into the game. And I think Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts in that thing. In terms of when you think about how to attack this Patriots defense, obviously because they are so sort of they can be a chameleon from week to week. They can change what they do from week to week so well. It's not like there's one sort of core concept that you can put in. It's not like, you know, they're playing cover three every snap, so you can run, you know, cover three beaters and hope that you're going to make plays like you could against the Seahawks years ago, for example. But in terms of, you know, what do you think offenses should be doing to try and stop beat this Patriots defense right now?
Well, start with running the ball. I think running the ball is, like, it's hard to find any weakness in this team, but you can say, even though they caused a fumble on that one big Chubb run, he did have that run. And I remember from that Jets game, it seemed like, and maybe it was also in part because the Jets were playing from behind, but it seemed like whenever they ran the ball, that Le'Veon Bell seemed to have his way. They had 5 to 7 yards here or there, maybe get 10 here or there. So I think that in running the ball, there's also less room for error. Like, worst case scenario, obviously a fumble could happen, but more than likely you're going to get like a 0 yard gain or maybe a loss. But best case scenario is you'll get a big run out of it. So I think that is low risk, and you can do that early in the game to kind of see the wrinkles that they have installed in their offense, and then you go from there. So I think it's more of a mental game for the coaching staff than it is pressure on the players. And that was one of the things that I was really troubled with, and I hate to keep going back to this Jets game, but I know it's a national game that everyone saw, but Adam Gase gave them nothing. And while we could say that Sam Darnold was seeing ghosts, like, they gave him no answer. There was nothing to answer for, and we knew what they were going to do. They showed in the first quarter that they were going to max blitz, zero blitz him every down, and you had no answer. So I suspect that is the case. That's going to be the case going forward. It's in the first quarter, they're going to show you what their plan is or what their wrinkles are. You need to take time to run the ball, throw conservative passes to see what those wrinkles are, and then game plan for those. Then at halftime, they may have had some other tweaks. Again, in the third quarter, you run some more conservative plays and game plan to defeat those later on.
Dominique, you betrayed your desire to be seen as an analytics guy. 2 minutes later, 2 minutes later, it's, oh, you got to run the ball. Come on. Yep. We know better. But you're right, though. I mean, when I won on SportsCenter this week, I was talking about, you know, what's the hole in this Patriots defense? And there is no hole, but you'd figure maybe what you can do is sort of dictate personnel, come out in 3-4 wide sets, spread the Patriots out, and then try and run the ball. And the Browns had a lot of success doing that against the Patriots this past week. I think they were over 120 yards. We came up a little bit in the Mike Reese section of the show. Of course, now if you're down 21 points, that's not going to be a very effective strategy. So you have to stay in the game one way or another. But in terms of how this might influence the league as a whole, I sort of made comparisons statistically to the 2007 Patriots offense in terms of they're that dominant versus the rest of the NFL. And my theory, at least with that Patriots offense, is that they really sort of introduced some trends, introduced some, you know, a pass happier approach that Andy Reid teams have been running as well, but more spread concepts came into the game, more tempo came into the game. And it felt like that team ended up influencing the NFL as a whole in the years to come. Is there something about this Patriots defense that makes you think they're going to influence the NFL as a whole? Or is this sort of just a unique one-off combination of great defensive mind, great secondary, everyone staying healthy, and just a lot of players who are really good?
Yeah, I mean, I think that focus on the secondary is something that you've seen a lot of smart teams, I think, do. And and understanding that man coverage, you need to be able to play man coverage in the modern NFL, considering how unique some of these schemes are. Zone beaters will absolutely beat the zone coverage. You can't beat man coverage if the receiver, if the DBs are playing in a way that they can't be beat, if that makes any sense. So like zone coverage, if you play a perfect cover two, the seams will still be open. If you play a perfect cover three, you can still flood the boundary of the zone. Like, but if you play a perfect man coverage, then there's nothing you can do about it. And I think as offenses get more complex, I think teams will understand that. Now, it's easier said than done finding all those players who can do that. The only other thing that you would copy from the Patriots is something that they've been doing for a long time and no one's copied it so far, is like not necessarily going after big money free agents. Like, they'll go after them if they are like unique, Randy Moss types or Gilmore types or Darrell Revis types. But most of all, like they do not depend on young cheap players and then try to fill out the rest of their rosters with kind of big name guys. They'd be much more content with getting a bunch of smart, dependable, reliable players in those positions on defense, which allow them to be pretty flexible, which you can't really do with young guys, no matter how talented they are. I think they value intelligence and experience more than the rest of the league that kind of values, seems to value a cheaper contract or a younger player over anything else.
Yeah, I mean, over 20 players for this team have played 100 or more snaps on defense. So many of those guys, especially at linebacker and in the secondary, are guys who have been in the scheme for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years. I mean, this is not a group learning on the fly. This is a group that generally knows what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball and has an experience, has a level of trust and communication with one another on the defensive side of the ball. Last question here. I'm going to finish up with this in terms of how you might attack quarterbacks. You mentioned the Patriots have played some bad quarterbacks, and I think that's absolutely fair to say. They've been dominant against some bad quarterbacks, but the quarterbacks have been pretty bad. Do you think because of how quarterbacks are coming into the NFL, the skill sets they have coming into the league, and maybe how much they're relying on their coordinators or their coaches to help them diagnose defenses or sort of, you know, limit what they have to do in terms of their pre-snap load, do you think it's easier for a really smart defensive coordinator like a Bill Belichick to sort of hide and amass what he wants to do on defense and sort of create confusion for those sorts of quarterbacks?
Yeah, I don't think it's any easier. I think it's always been pretty easy with the exception of kind of the greats. And even the greats, I think you are able to trick them. I mentioned earlier on that the way that you beat, or the way that we were able to like create problems for players like Peyton Manning, who I think Peyton Manning was the smartest quarterback that I played as far as pre-snap. He would find, it seemed like he would take a mental picture of everyone on the defense and someone would tell him what the coverage was. So if you know that, then you come in and you give him the hint that he's looking for and you make it appear as if he figured it out and you were trying to hide it. So I think that it might take you a little longer to like take that kind of second step in his logic to fool him. But I guess with younger quarterbacks who are coming in, maybe it's a little easier. So I guess I've come full circle on that. I understand your question now that maybe it's easier to get them with the first look, but it's something that Bill Belichick, I think, has been doing no matter the quality or the experience level or the intelligence of the quarterback. Is you just have to find what they're keying and then change that key.
All right. Well, as an olive branch, as a peace offering to Dominique Foxworth and the Foxworth family, I want to give you a chance here as we finish up to just pat yourself on the back. I want to hear what your best preseason prediction was that you haven't got enough credit for as the season has gone along.
Best preseason prediction. That's a tough one. I don't know. I mean, I pick the Packers defense to be much improved and that defense to represent the NFC. So that feels safer right now than, and it was a little bit on edge. It was a little bit of a risky decision, but I don't know. The rest of my predictions, I don't know that they were that good, honestly.
Come on. Come on.
What is yours?
I don't have any good predictions. That's not me. That's you. You're a television star. You're a first taker. You're a around the horn. You have so many different places that you're giving predictions. I feel very confident that some of those have turned out very well, and you're not getting.
I'm not on there for my predictions. I'm on there for my devilish good looks, obviously.
I appreciate that you're not even willing to say just straight up good looks, that they are devilish, devilish,
yeah, they're devilish.
All right. Well, that's your new nickname here on the show. devilishly handsome Dominique Foxworth. If people want to check out more of these takes, where can they do that?
At Foxworth24 on Twitter or at The Undefeated.
That's it. You're not going to plug any of the 18 TV shows you're on. Just The Undefeated.
I mean, they don't need my help. Get Up, I guess. I'm on there every Wednesday and Thursday. Wednesdays are particularly fun with Ryan Clark.
And they've been dubbed
Culture Wednesdays.
and on top of that, you have your own show on The Undefeated.
Yeah, I do a weekly digital show on The Undefeated where I talk about football. We've got a show every week. Only one of them has been good because that was the one that Bill Barnwell was on. So if you want to see it, look up that particular episode. Best one.
Do you know the name of your own show, Dominique? Are you forgetting it?
I do. I do. I just don't like the name. I didn't name it. I don't like the name, so I hate saying it. But it's called I Don't Give a Damn. The problem is I do actually give a damn.
Last week you do. Last week we had Robert Mays on the show, Bears fan. He refused to mention Mitchell Trubisky's name for the first 10 minutes of the show. So that is the Mitchell Trubisky of show names. I like it. I think it's great. I had a blast doing it. I watch it every week. Yeah. Strong recommend you check that out. Check out Dominique on Twitter. You're welcome back. You're still on probation. It's still a temporary welcome, but I appreciate that you hop back on the show.
Well, thanks for opening the door, and I will not scorn you ever again.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
All right, thanks so much to my guest today talking about this Patriots defense, Mike Reese of ESPN, Dominique Foxworth of ESPN. Of course, you already know both those guys. So please check them out on social media and on ESPN as well. And if you're interested in checking something else out, check out our brand new podcast, ESPN Daily, hosted by Mina Kimes. Monday through Friday, she takes a look at the most interesting stories at ESPN in just 20 minutes. And today, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, if you are not sick of listening to me after listening to the Bill Barnwell show, you can listen to Mina and I talk about the Patriots defense as well. It's a different sort of conversation, but I think absolutely worth the time. And you should be checking out ESPN Daily every day by listening and subscribing now wherever you find your podcast. We have more audio coming for you talking about the NFL here on the Bill Barnwell show next week. So thanks so much for listening.